Blog Talk Radio.
To Battle Red Radio. My name is Matt Weston, and tonight I'm waiting for the biggest, fattest, drunkest one of them all, BFD. And if you just want to hold tight, I guess if you're listening live, I'll make sure he gets on the air, because I'm not... All right, well, here he is, I believe. Hey.
I'm here. Sorry about the delay.
It's all right. Do I sound okay?
Yeah. I mean, as good as you can sound. I don't know about how far you want to take that.
Well, that's all that matters, as good as I can sound. Well, we'll skip the introductions, and we'll probably edit that out tomorrow. But, again, you're listening to Battle Red Radio, and tonight I'm joined by BFD. And how are you doing tonight?
I just got done cooking dinner for the family. You can hear water running in the background, kids crying, wife crying, the usual.
Yeah. Well, did you know that the Saints defense is really bad at playing football?
You know, I'm not sure if they knew they were playing football out there. There was only two guys out on that entire defense that looked like they really had a clue. And it was, I mean, clearly it's Cameron Jordan and Stephon Anthony. But the rest of that team is a damn. You know, we can look back at the first few weeks of our season and leave. But you look at that Saints team, they got nothing outside of those two guys on the defensive side of the ball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in this one, Houston did score 24 points, and again, the New Orleans Saints have the worst defense in the NFL, according to DVOA. And this is actually the first game where Houston scored points in their opening drive. Now, BFD, was this game more of a result of Houston's offense playing kind of like the game they're supposed to play, or was this more of the situation the Saints are just terrible at stopping opponents' offenses?
I think it's, you know, it's a little from column A and a little from column B. That is the Texans' game plan. That's what you expect them to do. You don't expect Brian Hoyer to throw the ball 50 times a game like he has earlier this year. You don't want that to happen. That's like totally worst-case scenario. Of course, you don't want Alfred Blue running the ball 20-plus times in the game either, but that's just, you know, poor decision-making on your personnel. But as far as what they try – oh, and the big thing is they the Saints clearly paid a lot of attention to DeAndre Hopkins. That, you know, they were making sure they had help over the top. So you took away his explosive plays. And, you know, when that's your only real weapon on offense, you take that away, you're going to plod and dink and dunk your way to 24 points.
Mm-hmm. And I guess what I kind of got out of it was, yes, the Saints defense is bad, but I think it was also kind of like the perfect game on, you know, that Houston wants to play. So an offense that can control the line of scrimmage, you know, they were able to run the ball well, even though their running backs are terrible. Their tight ends actually attacked the center of the defense. They won with Brian Hoyer, not because of him. And on the defensive side of the ball, they control the line of scrimmage too. The pass rush is there, especially J.J. Watt. And their corners are able to time, they're able to make plays on the ball. Now, I think all these things kind of combined is exactly what Houston wants to do, in addition to just kind of grind the clock out, playing tough defense, not letting the opposing offense get a lot of chances, and just kind of run – playing that grinding style they played last year. Would you agree with this assessment? And would there be any other type of, you know, main components to the Texans' style of game that they want to play that I missed out on?
No, not at all. This is the team, and it's been mentioned ad nauseum at this point, this is the team that we expected to see week one. We expected to see Brian Hoyer game managing rather than trying to push the ball downfield, because they're down 41-0. You don't want to see that. So, you know, once we got back what we were expecting, you know, the plodding kind of run game, we were hoping to have Arian Foster toting the rock and give it at least a little bit of explosiveness. Without that, you know, we're a different team, clearly offensively. But we were doing the things that we expected to do week one. You just can't, you know, when you point to the first 8 weeks of the season, and no, beating the baby-eating sister fuckers does not count as the start of the streak. It just really doesn't. That's just an awful team. You know, that's what we expected to see, and we've seen that the last four games for all intents and purposes. This one just happened to embody it the best.
I guess kind of like the really big surprise, you know, we do the incompletions post, and I stood there, sat there, whatever. I really couldn't think of a whole lot of stuff to write because it was such a just, you know, ball control game where, you know, just kind of the perfect storm for Houston's offense and defense where they played the game exactly how they want to play it. And whenever they were winning games last year in that 9-7 season, this was the type of football they were playing to, you know, be able to pull out that record as well as, you know, having an easy schedule. But I guess the one big surprise, though, besides the redundancy you kind of saw on Sunday, was that the tight ends actually had an impact on the passing game. Garrett Graham was another healthy scratch. Ryan Griffin and C.J. Fedorowicz both got the starts. But in the passing game, whenever you look at their stats combined, you know, Ryan Griffin did have more catches and targets than Fedorowicz did. But anyways, you look at their stats combined, they had 6 catches on 7 targets for 92 yards and 1 touchdown. BFD, is this a one-time thing, or is this something we should expect more of as the year progresses?
Well, evidently, when you pay a lot of attention to DeAndre Hopkins, other people, it's possible for other people to get open. Just throwing that out there. But what you also see is you see a Saints team that can't cover, I mean, at all. I spent most of the game making fun of Brandon Browner because he might be the worst football player in the NFL today. He really might be. If he's not getting torched, he's going to get the DPI anyway. Kenny Vaccaro can't cover. You know, Jairus Byrd, he can still pick off a ball or two, but he can't cover anymore either. It's a really poor coverage defense that the Saints have, and it comes down to personnel. Delvin Bro, yeah, you're a great fourth stringer, Delvin. You're not a starter. And so that allows the Ryan Griffins to get open, even CJF to get open. You know, I saw one comment, well, that turned out to be really stupid to IRDR Ryan Griffin, right? You know what? He's your third-string tight end. We could have used a third-string quarterback. We could use the linebacker that can cover and Mike Muhammad. So, you know, I do see this as kind of an outlier, but if this is the team that's capable of adjusting that we've seen over the past 4 games, then maybe it's, you know, this is the way forward with the tight ends.
Yeah, I kind of, that's what I got of it too whenever I watched it, was they're just putting so much on Hopkins that, you know, other guys that have the chance to get some targets. I know Washington had about 5 or 6, Schwartz about 5 or 6, and the Titans had a bunch as well. And Hoyer also only threw 27 passes in this game. But I do think, though, whenever they're at least looking for the Titans now. You know, they ran some rollouts. That touched on the, you know, Griffin caught, for example. That was a rollout to the right where they were trying to find Griffin on that pass play. I mean, they're actually starting to look for these tight ends and actually make some things happen. I do think that kind of change in the dynamic that tight end plays by putting Lamb at the 6th tight end to be able to block. So now you can use one guy on the backside. He's not as important to the, you know, in the running game. So now he can go out there and make routes. And so you're not having to go into a bunch of spread sets. So now you actually can get a guy who can block on the edge, neutralize your tight end on the other side, let him run routes and actually have some part in the offense.
It would be good to know. I would like to know, and that's something that I didn't see a count on, is how many times that Lamb was in there with the second tight end, or with the first tight end, so to speak. Because Lamb was in there quite a bit. I mean, how often did you hear the announcer saying, you know, Lamb checking in, 63 checking is an eligible receiver? I'm looking right now to get the exact Lamb snap count. 16 snaps, you know, geez. Ryan Griffin, 42. CJF, 45. You know, they're spreading out that tight end. God, Jay Prosh with 10 worthless snaps. What a waste.
He's the worst.
But, you know, he's terrible. So that's how much faith the Texans still have in their wide receivers. That's why you can say, yeah, sure, Ryan Griffin had 4 catches. But, you know, Kendall Lamb is still getting 16 snaps out there.
Mm-hmm.
Out of 73.
Yeah, I do think that was the case where you're not playing both Griffin and Fedorowicz at the same time. So now instead of having to run, you know, 4 wide receiver sets, you can at least have one tight end in there and put Lamb in there and be able to feel okay, which is something different than they had earlier in the year whenever we have, you know, Mumphries actually getting playing time at wide receiver and that sort of situation. So this one obviously seems like a better fit, and, you know, it's worked out so far so well these last 3 weeks.
Yeah, but I think we can't kind of keep – I think we have to keep beating the dead horses. This is all about the offensive line. This
yeah.
really is. This is an offensive line that is just beautiful, working together, ace blocks, deuce blocks. This team can do no wrong right now with the offensive line. It's beautiful to see.
Yeah, and, I mean, ever since they got that unit starting together, they've just been beating up teams. And these are also really good defenses. I mean, minus New Orleans, but, the Bengals have a top 10 defense. The Jets have the number one run defense in the league, and they were able to beat up their fronts pretty well. And I think what I kind of like about this offensive line is that, with the running back situation where you can't run that zone scheme anymore, all five guys on the line, besides Brown, who isn't that good of a run blocker, but the rest of them, they can all run other schemes. They can run power. They can run inside zone. They can run counter. They can pull. They can do a lot of different things. So they have four guys who are very versatile in that line, and they're able to run a bunch of different plays. That's how they kind of changed without Foster being here for the rest of the year.
Yeah, I agree, definitely.
Now, the one thing that we didn't get to touch on last week just because of time was now we'll also want to talk about this week because it kind of showed up as well, where it's this thing where Bill O'Brien just hasn't been very aggressive as a head coach. Against the Jets, they ran the ball six times to end the game. They had two possessions, had two three and outs where they ran the ball. They gave Ryan Fitzpatrick two chances to tie, and he ended up throwing two interceptions. But those are still two opportunities where you get one first down, the game's over, and they opted not to try that at all. And then this week against New Orleans, they were up by 18, and then they went ahead and just shut off their entire offense. They were just running real vanilla scheme, just run the ball up the middle and punting and take it as they could. And New Orleans, after that, they had two drives in the red zone, one in with the interception by Kareem Jackson, the other one ended on a turnover on downs. But still, if New Orleans gets two touchdowns there, they get another chance to score probably about 2 minutes left if they score in those red zone possessions. And, it kind of been a case where Houston doesn't again. They're playing more timid. They're not being aggressive enough. And we kind of saw it last year, too, with O'Brien, where he's kicking field goals where he should. And he's not going for a fourth down when he shouldn't. And right now that this team is actually 6-5 and is entering the playoff picture, these problems that, don't seem so big in wins against the Jets and the Saints can be kind of like cataclysmic problems whenever you're playing the Colts in week 16, for chances for that division title and actually make the playoffs. Am I looking too much into the tea leaves here, BFD? Are these real problems that we should consider moving forward?
I think Bill O'Brien is absolutely the classic risk-averse coach, that he does not want to take any chances. That's not necessarily a bad thing, because when you have Brian Hoyer as your quarterback and Alfred Blue as your starting halfback, then you're going to have to make decisions based upon those weaknesses. You don't want Brian Hoyer throwing the ball 35 times a game. You don't. Only bad things can happen in that scenario, or you're playing from behind. Well, still bad things happen. So you have to understand your personnel. But, what we've seen with the offense lately is we've seen a great mix-up of the Wild Bull. You've got the note in there, Akeem Hunt with his toss. There are things that we can do that's going to be more successful than Alfred Blue off guard and a power run for 3 yards. We've got better things we can do with the talent we've got. Mm-hmm. So Bill O'Brien is ultra conservative. It's hard to fault him to a certain degree, but didn't we learn with Conserviak that going conservative too early is a bad thing? And, when we're going to go in against an offense that can put up points, and the Saints theoretically, but, Drew Brees clearly doesn't have the weapons he used to. When you have an offense that can put up points quickly, that is not the scenario you want. I want more blood.
Yeah, and I think this is something that I understand the personnel, but you still would like to just try to kind of finish the game off. And that Jets game could have gone poorly. They could have lost that game. And all these games are a lot more precious now. I think it's something that will kind of get masked underneath the rug, and they're playing Indy, and maybe they're down by 7 with 4 minutes to go, and they have 3 timeouts, and they kick a field goal at, they have 4th and 1 at Indy's, 15-yard line. I could see that sort of thing happen just because of risk aversion. It's not even just this year. We saw the same thing again last year, too, as well. And, if you're listening, you're a Texans fan, I think one of the things I'd be worried about going forward with O'Brien this season, even though he's able to turn this team around and start winning games, is just how timorous he's been, the timidity, and if that's going to cause any problems whenever you're playing these one-possession games where, it really matters.
Well, and look at what Sean Payton did. Sean Payton – handed us that game when he went for the field goal on the when they were down. God, I can't remember the score, but they had their first field goal on the board, and it was like 4th and 1 or 4th and 2 down up in our field, and he kicks a field goal. It was like, that's it. Thank you. You just gave us another score that you have to put on the board. Thank you so much. That's the kind of conservative coaching that hurts.
And especially whenever the other team comes down and scores anyways, and those points kind of become vanished. I think my favorite example, though, is whenever they were down 35-0 to the Falcons at the half, and they kick a field goal. And then they start going for the fourth quarter or whatever, and Cecil Shorts gets hurt. And Bill O'Brien's excuse is that, we play aggressive football. Bullshit. You're not playing aggressive football. You're kicking a field goal down 35-0. That's not true at all. But, he's done a nice job turning this team around, but I am very afraid of just this, passiveness. In these situations, you need to just go for it and finish it. And just kind of stick the dagger in there, because there's no need to lose these games. And it hasn't hurt them yet, but I'm, scared against Indy. I'm scared against Buffalo. I'm even scared against the Jaguars in week 17, whenever you don't make these decisions that are, not that difficult to make. And I'm reading this book on the Civil War, and the things they say about, Lee and Grant is that both of them felt that you can't have success without risk. And so O'Brien's trying to take as little risk as possible while trying to, make the playoffs at the same time, which I don't think is going to work out too well.
Well, yeah, and the Jaguars are the perfect example for that. Now they have skilled players like Allen Hurns, Allen Robinson, T.J. Yeldon, Julius Thomas, and Blake Bortles. You know what? That's a team that can drop 21 on you quickly.
Too bad Bortles just makes like 4 really stupid plays a game, and is going to ruin this week 17 AFC South battle. But anyways, you did touch on Hunt, and he had a really good toss play where he almost scored on, and it was like, wow, who was that? And one of those sorts of runs. And I don't know if he was even that fast, or if you just watch Grimes in blue over and over again, and anybody who runs a 4.5 40 is just Usain Bolt. But my thoughts on that were that I don't think he's going to be, he maybe a touch or two in the offense, but I want to see him return kicks. I'm so tired of seeing Mumphrey back there. And, every kickoff is at the 20-yard line. Every punt's a fair catch. He offers zero in the, in the return game. So I like to see Hunt back there. And I was wondering, what's your opinions on Hunt? You want to see him more in the offense? And do you like this idea of having him being used in kick returns?
Oh, I want more Hunt. He is explosive. This team, I wish I had more time to post, because one of the things that I've thought about often is the Houston Texans, even with DeAndre Hopkins, we do not have a lid lifter on this roster. We don't have a speed burner who's going to threaten the touchdown every time he touches the ball. We don't have that, and we haven't had that sort of player in a very, very long time. I mean, maybe
pre-first
injury area. No, not Jacoby Jones. Well, kind of, I guess. Because he was going to also – yeah, he was going to drop it. But, like Arian Foster, when he'd get a screen, the younger version, get a screen or a run play, and he was a threat to break it. We haven't had that kind of speed on this roster in a long time. Give Hunt more touch, please, for the love of crikey.
Yeah, and is there anything else you want to touch on at all on the offensive side of the ball?
Nate Washington Nate Washington needs to come off the field. Just please get Jalen Strong out there. He deserves the snaps. He can't be worse. Strong is the next closest thing we have to a young guy who can stretch the field, make plays. I don't know what Strong is doing wrong, but it's time to forgive and forget. Get Washington to the bench and get Strong out there on the field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that too. And also, you kind of saw them on the defense where they start playing younger players, and it's kind of turned the entire defense around a lot of ways. Where just a few personnel switches and you're playing more aggressive football because you have more speed, and it's turned this whole thing around. Defensively, though, they did hold the Saints to 6 points, and they were 7th in DVOA. They held the Jets to 17 points, and they were 16th in DVOA. They held Cincinnati to 6 points, and they were 1st DVOA. And these are last week's rankings, too, by the way. And they held Tennessee to 6, and they were 27th in DVOA. Now, I was a little skeptical still about this defense, being officially turned the corner. I didn't know if it was a hot streak yet or not. It is one of the things that, we've talked about before, where it's really easy to get caught up in every single game, because, a football game in baseball is 10 games. A football game in basketball is worth 4 games. And so all these games are a lot more important. They happen once a week. And, you can really get caught up in all that rather than just taking one game at a time whenever you're especially if you're doing a podcast like this. But so I was skeptical about it, but I kind of think this defense has turned the corner now. What do you think? Is this the defense we're going to see for the rest of the year? or is this something that we're just getting our hopes up?
Well, you know, I would have said that we are still kind of on the poser side, but the fact is that there's no way to look at it and not say the Saints are legit. We're putting up 420 plus yards passing every game. We've been getting killed on the pass. We have struggled to get to the quarterback. That's no longer true. You know, when you look at the Pro Football Focus rankings, right now we're at 82.6. I'm pretty sure J.J. Watt is something like 70 of that. So, you know, we're basing a lot of how we look on a ranking system like that upon one player. Jonathan Joseph looks like he's 25 years old again. You know, that by itself is a huge change.
Mm-hmm.
Jadeveon Clowney it's like he's right there. He's like teasing us now with his play. He's just right there. He's getting to the quarterback. He's creating a lot of hurries. He might not be putting up numbers, but he's looking better. Vince Wilfork isn't playing as much, so he looks better when he's on the field. Mostly. He got spun by the center with one arm on a run play on Sunday. So, you know, but it's hard to say that I'm all in on this team, but I'm definitely a lot more confident on the defensive side of the ball. And, again, it's so much addition by subtraction. We talk about it. I talk about it every week because I think it's the important thing. Andre Howell is getting snaps. Kareem Jackson looks wonderful again out there. Getting him back healthy is good. It's a different team, and the scheme is better. The scheme is different. We're rushing Merciless, Simon, Clowney, and Watt, and sometimes Cushing, and we're getting Jared Crick and Vince Wilfork off the field during those situations. Those are huge additions by subtractions. Menardrick McKinney looks beautiful out there. So, you know, it's changing the talent that's on the field, changing the scheme. It's a lot more easy to believe in them now.
Mm-hmm. I'm not in on the offense yet because it's still Brian Hoyer at quarterback. And it's one of the things where you can win with him but not because of him. And you need so many things to go right to win football games with Hoyer. But I'm in on this defense. I think they're actually going to be, you know, a top 10 defense. And actually after this week, excuse the fire alarms, I guess, and wherever he's at in Austin. But but on the defense side of the ball, though, they're top 10 defensive DVOA now. They're negative 4.9%. They're actually ninth in the league. And we're expecting them to be at least a top 10 unit, maybe a top five after being sixth last year with the additions that they've made. And so I watched the coaches' film of the Jets game and the Bengals game. And I really like this, you know, defense again. I think the one thing that's really has changed is that having Andre Howell back there playing center field, so then, you know, Cornell started playing the corners up a lot closer to the line of scrimmage. That lets them be more aggressive where they can make plays on the ball, which leads to not so many just 7-yard passes over and over again where then you have to creep up and then you get beat deep. I think McKinney's made a huge difference in the run game, especially in the fact that I think he understands how to play pass coverage now. He knows who to cover. So now Eddie Pleasant isn't there in nickel packages anymore. So you have two linebackers who can tackle in those formations. And also Cushing's got a lot better too as well. He's running all over the field. They're doing some really cool things with how they fake blitz and bring him down the flat. He's making plays, you know, all the way to the other sideline. He's tackling really well. He's taking on guards. And then also J.J. Watt has just been, you know, playing out of his mind. And, you know, with all these things, you know, combining, you know, we, like I said, we went from them being a potential top 10 defense to 25th, and now they've already closed that back to being a top 10 defense again. So, yes, I think this defense is here to stay. And, you know, they're really good. They've been a lot of fun to watch, too.
Yeah, and the biggest change outside of the scheme that you really notice that really jumps out off the screen at you is the speed at which we're playing. I mean, it was a lethargic-looking defense, very methodical. And now we're just jumping off the screen. It's great.
And they're very aggressive, too. And that was kind of the one thing stuck on that Bengals film when I started watching, was just the communication. They're swarming all over the ball. And they're playing a lot more zone coverage, too. But they're just guys flying everywhere. And you weren't seeing that at all whenever they were getting beat by the Falcons, the Chiefs, the, you know, the Dolphins, the Panthers. They, like you said, they were lethargic. They looked slow. And it's just, you know, something's just completely changed there.
Yeah, and I want to point out two very specific plays. I don't remember the exact scenarios. Sorry, I don't keep track of that in my mind for some reason. Menardrick McKinney blowing up a screen pass. He read it just about immediately and immediately got his hips turned and back toward the running back. That was in the second quarter, I believe. And then Clowney chased down a play 20 yards down the field from the opposite side of the field. He must have covered a good 35, 40 yards on that play. That's the sort of hustle that we're seeing from younger players with good speed who can make those type of plays. Jared Crick cannot make that play. So that's what we need to see out there. That's the type of player we need to see, more athleticism. And the defense now is rolling in it.
Mm-hmm. I just want to talk about the Saints game plan. They didn't run the ball up the middle a lot. And one of the things I've kind of noticed watching the All-22 is that they still have problems stopping runs up the middle, and it's mainly because Vince Wilfork is just, he's still trash. But the Saints didn't run the ball up the middle a lot. They ran a lot of quick passes, which, made sense previously, where if you get your skill guys in space, Houston can't make those tackles, and you can be able to pick up a lot of yards. But they just kept running those plays over and over and over again, even if they weren't working. But I was wondering if you picked up anything during the game as to why Houston's actually able to shut down these screen passes against the Saints, after it being such a big weakness,
I think it's just because we're playing our cornerbacks close to the line of scrimmage. I mean, when you're playing your cornerback 8 yards off, you're allowing a lineman to get out there and lead block on a screen. Even a wide receiver screen, you're giving up that ability. So that, to me, number one, you're putting more pressure on the wide receiver, on the running back, to catch the ball and make a play. Number two, I think it's just a speed increase. Clowney is great at shutting screens down. McKinney has proven to be great. J.J. Watt, he's not so much against the screen. He's kind of a put your ears back kind of guy. But these guys but Watt can recover. his recovery speed's incredible. I also think that Kevin Johnson being out on the field, that we have Jonathan Joseph, Kareem Jackson, and Kevin Johnson are the three best, the trio of best tackling cornerbacks in the league right now. Put it all together, and it's a much better looking team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think from what I've seen, I think it's kind of stemmed from they're playing a lot more aggressive, and their corners playing close to the line of scrimmage. And gone are the days of, Dems playing the box, covering the tight end, and Joseph and Jackson or Joseph and Johnson playing 8 yards off the wide receiver every play, and then just leaving Raheem Moore back there to help out whichever side. Those days are gone now, and they're actually playing whenever they go in their nickel formations. Now you have Charles James out there, and now you have Jackson as the third corner. And so now you have these quicker guys who are all around the ball, and they're reacting quickly. And I think Crennel is just kind of giving the go-ahead to just play more aggressive. And I kind of think it kind of stems from Hal, where he feels confident in the fact that if they throw the ball deep, there's somebody back there as a speed who can make a play on the ball. And so rather than playing their entire defense around being afraid to get beat deep, now they can attack those, quick little screen and smoke passes.
Yeah, Hal ran a 4.540 at the combine. And for a safety, that's pretty good wheels. Mm-hmm. That's somebody who'll cover a lot of area for you. And I want to point out one thing about Vince Wilfork real fast is his snaps since the Miami game have gone from about 60 to 65% of snaps to about 35% of snaps.
Yeah, it's good. And what I've seen kind of is they run their nickel formations. They've been playing Dunn and Covington, defensive tackle, and just keeping him out there completely because, he doesn't do anything very well. Like Jonathan Crick is better taking on double teams than Wilfork is at this point. And, he's trying to take on one lineman every time there's a snap, and rather than taking on two, and then even if he one gaps, he's too slow to make a play on the ball. So he's bad. He's going to be bad this year, and maybe they'll probably end up cutting him after this year.
Yeah, I can't imagine him coming back. And Christian Covington, how good does he look? This is once again, this is going with youth and speed. That's what this defensive change is about.
Mm-hmm. Well, also, Kareem Jackson was back this week, and he had that interception in the red zone. With Kevin Johnson starring the other side of Jonathan Joseph, was there anything in particular you saw in how they used Jackson?
I tried to pick up some sort of scheme. I thought they would use him more as a safety-type guy. It looked like they were using him in the corner or in the slot quite a bit. Yeah. I admit I did not see a whole lot of rhyme or reason in his usage. It's not to say it's a bad thing because he can flip in and out. He has throughout his career, so it's not a big deal. But I think they were just trying to match up guys as well as they could. I don't know if they're Johnson's on Willie Snead kind of thing, but I think it was clearly it's a great use of our cornerbacks on Sunday.
Yeah, I just saw him play well in the slot. It was really all I was able to pick up on. And he looked good, too. I don't know what was going on earlier in the year. My thought was that he was just playing so far off the ball that he wasn't able to press it all anymore. And it just kind of threw him off his game. And also, part of it, like, he just wasn't even looking for the football anymore. And it was kind of like in that 2013 season when he was terrible and was able to bounce back last year. But he looked good, though. And I think, you know, we talked about heading into the year that the secondary could be the strength of this defense. And that looked sound like an insane thought after the first 3 weeks. But the entire thing is kind of switched around with Kevin Johnson playing great. Jonathan Joseph, you know, having lost a step, but still just having such a great skill at playing the position. Jackson looks a lot better. Howell at safety. Daryl Morris and, you know, James able to play the fourth corner slash slot. And, you know, Dempsey's still slow back there, but he blitzes okay and can tackle the box or whatever. But, you know, it's a really good secondary all of a sudden out of nowhere.
Yeah. It's mind-blowing. It's not mind-blowing at all. You cannot expect your cornerbacks to play 8 yards off the ball and be effective.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it's more mind-blowing the fact that they were just so bad and we didn't see any changes occurring. You know, they kept doing the same thing over and over again. And after you lose 41-0, you'd think something would change. And no, they trotted out the next week and the week after. And that wasn't until that Tennessee Titans game where we saw some actual real changes occur.
Right.
But speaking of mind-blowing, J.J. Watt had 2 sacks. He's now first in the NFL with 13.5 on the year. He had five tackles in this game. 2 of those tackles were for a loss. And he had 7 quarterback hits. Now, of this wide variety to choose from, what was your favorite of the bunch?
I guess mine was kind of the ESPN moment when he had the box jump trying to knock down a Drew Brees pass. And that hang time, man, jeez. That's what is he, 6'6", 290? And he's getting that kind of up. I mean, I played basketball against guys who went to the NBA. And when I saw that, I was just, wow. I mean, I remember seeing these, you know, 6'6", 210-pound guys getting 43-inch verticals, and J.J. Watt got pretty daggum close to that, and he's moving 290 pounds. So it's just that athleticism, just to me, blows my mind. It's just incredible.
Yeah, that was pretty horrifying. I saw the picture of it. My brother, you know, showed me. He was on Facebook, whatever. I guess J.J. Watt posted it, and I was like, oh, my God. That was pretty unbelievable. My favorite, though, was the sack he had against Streif, and he beat Streif all day. But just his rip, like his rip is just incredible where he doesn't even, like most guys, they come into the defender whenever they bring that bull rush and they rip around him to come into him. So and then they rip to get off the block. With Watt, he's not even coming into him at all. He's just starting his rip right away, and then he has that arm hooked, and then he's around him like that, and then he's at the quarterback when he plants. And it's disgusting. I think also the thing about Watt is so much fun to watch in whenever he pass rushes is he can do all the moves. He can spin, he can swim, he can rip, he can stem, he can bull rush. And most guys just have an outside move and an inside move, and they can, you know, get 10 sacks a year like that. But Watt can do all 5, all 6, you know.
Poetry. I mean, J.J. Watt is pass rushing poetry.
And last week we did talk about Drew Brees as a possible Texans quarterback, and you know, like the facts again before, he is owed $30 million if he stays in New Orleans next year. New Orleans is now 4-7. They're not going to make the playoffs this year. They have a third round quarterback on their roster. It looks like Sean Payton could be possible that he leaves. He's from Texas, and it seems like Houston's have to answer this quarterback situation, you know, sometime sooner rather than later. That's the SparkNotes version of it. If you want to listen to the full thing, you can listen to last week's episode. But anyways, what did you think about Drew Brees? Do you think he still has it? I know according to the numbers, he's still a top 7 quarterback. But what'd your eyeballs tell you after watching him play last Sunday?
That he spent the entire game sharting himself. That's my takeaway from the game. It's rare. You know, Drew Brees is, you know, he's been around forever and a day. At this point, he's still younger than I am, damn it. But, you know, he does not play scared. He is not a quarterback who plays scared. He was a little kitten out there the entire game, His feet showed it. His body language showed it. He played scared. And I think really, you know, we talk about the defense, but I think just the mere fact of J.J. Watt lining up against him scared the crap out of him. So that's what I saw. That's not how you normally see Drew Brees. You know, Drew Brees is all 6'1", 6', stands in the pocket strong. He's a Hall of Fame, potentially Hall of Fame quarterback. And he played like a frightened kitten.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what I saw with him is I saw that the arm strength wasn't there like it had been previously. Like, he was throwing some out routes that are usually completions for him where he just doesn't have, you know, the strength to get that ball out there consistently. But, man, I mean, he was accurate still, though. Like, you know, he even though there was so much pass rush, he was still able to step up in the pocket, was really composed. And, I mean, he made some great throws like that one. He threw to Watson in the end zone where he put it right over Eddie Pleasant's hand. And, I mean, it was just one of those oh-my-God throws, I like to say. And it goes off Watson's hands, and then he ends up throwing that pick to Jackson shortly after. But, I mean, he made some great plays that game, and I still think he's there. Like I said last week, I think his game will endure well because of his accuracy. You know, even though his arm strength isn't, you know, incredible anymore, but he's just so accurate, and I think he's really intelligent too, where he can know where to go with the ball before the snap and throw, you know, kind of dink and duck around the field and take your shots deep, kind of what we've seen from Brady and Manning as they have gotten older.
Yeah, but what I think, you know, you talk about his – yeah, he doesn't – clearly, I mean, he doesn't have the same arm strength, but he wasn't finishing passes on Sunday either. He wasn't able to finish a lot of passes because he had somebody in the space. But I think that's a big part of it. He was not comfortable. And we see that. We see that with quarterbacks. I mean, it's not unusual. You watch a guy like Brian Hoyer who, when he gets pressured, you know, he sharks himself. And it's not an abnormal – quarterback trait, but Drew Brees just has never been the kind of guy who shows that, and he showed it in spades.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a viewer question from J.J. Watt's arm brace before we move on, and his question was, which player has surprised you the most these past few weeks?
I think I would go with Andre Howell playing over Raheem Moore. I mean, it's one thing to say, oh yeah, well, you know, he's playing much better than Raheem Moore, but that's like saying, you know, getting a cold isn't quite as bad as herpes. Andre Howell shows a lot of range, and it's kind of beautiful to watch his ability back there, his ability to make plays on the ball. He's not afraid to tackle. And we've talked about, you know, several times, he's not a big guy. I mean, he's listed at 5'10", 188. He looks like he's 5'9", 170. I mean, he really does. But he's not afraid to get in and mix it up. And sometimes you just can't ask for more than that. And it's fun to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Howell has been surprising. I think he kind of found his role. I mean, the size is an issue. Like, if you watch him one versus one in man schemes, if he goes against a bigger receiver, they can nudge him off the line pretty easily. And they can do that Rob Gronkowski, you know, throw the shoulder and then cut out wide and get off him pretty easily. And he's not a good tackler. But he doesn't have to be at the position he's playing. And I am really disappointed in, say, Cecil Shorts on this one after, you know, how you just smeared his name wrongly at the beginning of the year and he's turned everything around. But my answer would have to be, you know, Sua Fio. I know, you know, there is all this talk about how terrible he is, how awful he is. And, you know, I never went that far with my analysis on him. My thing was always that he just missed one thing. He made 4/5 of a block, but wouldn't make that last little part that would end up ruining for him. You know, for example, he's going to the second level. He's square. His feet are chopping. He has a wide base. He's low. And then he makes his punch, and he doesn't grab. He just shoves the linebacker, and the linebacker comes down and makes the tackle. And just that one little, you know, piece of refinement was what he was missing. And, you know, it's come together these last few weeks, you know, ever since the bye week. And, he was benched earlier in the year. And I've been surprised by how well he's played. I didn't think he was going to be this complete after, you know, watching his few spot starts earlier. And it's been, you know, really surprising. As somebody who was a Sua Fio backer, you know, whenever he was getting his name smeared to BFD Cecil Shorts levels.
And by the way, I just for the record, I let you have Sua Fio.
Yeah, good. Well, great. And this offensive line's a lot of fun. And, yeah, I probably won't write about them again for the rest of the year. But I was kind of bummed this defense is playing well because I went right about some other things. But the after I wrote why they're best, like after why they're good, which should be out this week. But anyways, we'll talk about the playoffs now. And Houston.
Playoffs.
Houston, Indy. I should probably make a sound cut for that. We get that and have some more refinement in this as we become more of a four-fifths podcast to a five out of five podcast. But Houston, Indy, Kansas City, and the Jets all won. Jacksonville lost a real heartbreaker. You know, Bortles just makes three stupid plays a game. And, you know, it's like that Geno Smith thing where everything else is there, but he's just so stupid sometimes that, you know, he screws you out wins. And then Pittsburgh and Buffalo lost as well. Now, I know you said last week that the wild card was off the table. But since 6-5, they are tied with Pittsburgh at the moment. Same thing with Indy. And it's right now, you know, Houston and Indy, both their wild card playoff probabilities are below 5%. But if Indy beats Pittsburgh, the wild card could be in play. Now, does this surprise you at all?
Totally. I really did not think that any team was going to come. And we're talking about 4 weeks ago. I didn't think a team was going to come out of the AFC South with a record better than 7-9. And then what we've seen is the corpse of Matt Hasselbeck has played better than Andrew Luck, and the Houston Texans all of a sudden know how to play football. You know, nobody really saw that. Nobody saw that 4 weeks ago. So that makes a huge difference in the outlook. So, you know, the biggest problem is we still get to beat up on each other. Indy, the Glitter Kitties and ourselves, we're going to beat up on each other. You know, everybody's going to shit all over the Titans because he really cares. But that's going to be a battle for the AFC South. And now all of a sudden we went from the division in the league to, you know, not bad. I mean, easily the worst, you got to say now, is the NFC East.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Giants are going to play the Patriots in the Super Bowl. So whatever happens there really doesn't matter. But I guess I'll do what we've been doing the past 3 weeks. And I'll spell out the stream of schedule the rest of the way. Now, first, I'll spit out the playoff probability, then the stream of schedule the rest of the way, and then the team's opponent this week. And again, all these numbers are from Football Outsiders, which is a very good website. And if you want to look at, you know, any type of numbers for NFL teams as a whole, they are, you know, the best in business at it. Individual numbers, they aren't there as well because, you know, a lot of what they do is from game charting, and they do it all at the end of the year rather than, you know, week by week by – however, those Wizards have Pro Football Focus to it. But anyways, right now Houston has a 49.5% chance of making the playoffs. Their strength of schedule is negative 0.4%, which is 17th. They play the Bills this week. Indy has 50.5% chance to make the playoffs, which is just barely, but which is 1% better than Houston. Negative 7.9% schedule for the rest of the way, which is 26th. They're playing Pittsburgh. Jacksonville, 5.9%. They're still the easiest schedule in the league, and they give 12.8%, and they're playing Tennessee. Kansas City, after winning 5 in a row, they're at 87.2% chance, and they have the 24th easiest schedule, and they give 6.4%. And they're playing Oakland. Pittsburgh just lost to Seattle at 44%. They have the 10th hardest schedule at 3.5%, and they're playing Indy this week. Buffalo, after losing Kansas City, has a 16.8% chance to make the playoffs. They have the 25th easiest schedule at negative 6.4%, and again, they're playing Houston. And the Jets are at 36.7% playoff probability. They have the 19th easiest schedule at negative 1.3%, and this week they're playing the Giants. Do you have anything else you want to add to this playoff race as far as analysis goes?
We still have games to go. I mean, so a lot can change. The Chiefs are playing like they were expected to play at the beginning of the year. We're playing like we were expected to play at the beginning of the year. Even the Clots are playing like they were expected to play at the beginning of the year. So you've got a lot of teams that are kind of that started off slowly and are kind of regressing back to what was expected to happen. We saw some really, really crappy football in the first 8 weeks of the season, and I think that we can expect the opposite from here on out. I mean, this is going to be a fun little ride.
Yeah, and I mean, we've talked about it before. It just kind of depends on how they finish these last 3 weeks against Tennessee, Indy, and Houston. I mean, and Jacksonville. And it seems like whichever team goes 3-0 in the AFC South to end it between Indy and Houston, that's going to be the team that makes the playoffs this year. And but we're getting closer, and even the wild card could be in play, especially if Indy beats Pittsburgh this week. Then that will kind of really – I bet these wild card probabilities below 5% probably jump up to, you know, 20%. we'll see something that dramatic if they are able to beat Pittsburgh. But this week, Houston is playing the Buffalo Bills. And as I said earlier, the Bills lost to the Chiefs last week. And, they were kind of beat up in this game. And first, we'll talk about their defense. Freedom Wright had a question for us relating to it where he went and checked out the Buffalo Bills SB Nation subsidiary, Buffalo Rumblings. And he said that there's a lot of hate over there for Rex Ryan. They want him gone. They're saying he's a fraud. He destroyed their defense, especially from going from a 4-3 to a 3-4. And his question, BFD, was, has he, and what kind of game should we expect from the Bills defense on Sunday?
I got to be honest, I don't know. Because the biggest wild card right now is Mario Williams, the famous ex-cheerleader for the Texans. Oh, I'm sorry, it's Mario Williams, my bad. He is not, I think as of right now, he is not expected to suit up. And so that's clearly a huge loss for them. But on the other hand, he's not having a very good year. In fact, they aren't getting to the quarterback like they have in the past. Jerry Hughes has been decent for them getting to the quarterback, but he's a guy you can shut down. He really is. The team revolves around Marcell Dareus in the middle, who's probably one of the top five best defensive linemen in the league. So, I mean, clearly he's a guy that you rally around anyway, but this is a team that's not getting to the quarterback. It's not being disruptive. I got to say that with the personnel group that they have, and let's just look at the defensive line. Only looking at the defensive line, you have Kyle Williams, Marcell Dareus, Mario Williams, Jerry Hughes. That screams 4-3. That's a 4-3 defensive line if I've ever seen one. And for them to make that change, I think, is not understanding the talent you have on your team. And I think that if you're a Buffalo Bills fan and you see that you had so much success for the past couple of years with the 4-3, that you had guys playing positions they should be, that you're not making Marcell Dareus try to play a zero tech when that's not what he does, then I think they're right to be pretty upset about what's going on there.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I think this is one of the situations where you have a head coach who knows the scheme, and he wants to fit everything into his scheme rather than put out the best game plan for his players. And we talked about before with O'Brien and Cornell, this year, where the main job of the coach is just put his players in the best position to succeed. That's what his number one goal is to put the talent in the spots where they'll be able to make plays. And last year, the Bills were second defensive DVOA. This year, they're 21st. And the best part about that defense was their defensive line. I mean, one of my favorite things I ever wrote was that Bills defensive line article I wrote last year. And, they were my favorite thing I got to watch last year was watching them play with Williams and Hughes at defensive end. Williams can both play the run and the pass better than, not J.J. Watt level, but, he's a top five defensive end. Kyle Williams was just stellar against the run because he's so low to the ground. Dareus is stellar against the run as well, but he can also rush the passer from the three technique. And then Hughes is just a speed guy who is great off stunts, great off the edge. And whenever you move them to a 3-4, like that, you're completely changing how they play. I know I read some things earlier in the year how Mario Williams was complaining that he's dropping back on, 40% of his snaps or whatever. That's ridiculous when you have one of the best pass rushers in the league who's having to drop back just because he's playing outside linebacker now. You're moving Kyle Williams from the one technique where he just excels at to the three technique where he's getting more double teams rather than just getting to go against the center. And you have Dareus at the zero technique where he can't disrupt anymore. Now he's tying up blockers. And then, you have Hughes playing outside linebacker, which is fine. But he's so good, his hand to the ground, because he's able to go against a slower, worse right tackle. And so whenever you do all this, it just kind of messes up what was so great in the past. And if I was a Bills fan, I'd be upset too, especially because this is, I think, like the 12th best offense, and they've never had an offense this good. And so it's kind of switched from the second best defense in the league to the 21st, defense, from the 21st ranked offense to the 12th ranked offense after 1 year. And Ryan really has kind of screwed things over, even though they finally found a quarterback.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned Kyle Williams. He's one of those guys that. When we drafted J.J. Watt, it's like, oh, man, we got a Kyle Williams-type guy. That's pretty dadgum good. I mean, clearly J.J. Watt's a lot better than Kyle Williams, but Williams is a fantastic player. I mean, he's getting up there in age. Yeah, he's one of the least known players in the league, and I tell you, he's one of the most effective defensive tackles in the NFL today, and people just don't realize that. It's kind of funny sometimes.
Yeah,
he's a joy. If you like defensive line play, you want to watch him.
Yeah, I know you get to watch him from last year. I know he's out for the rest of the year with a knee injury. I know Darius was probable heading the Kansas City game. He ended up playing. And then Williams didn't end up playing. He had a foot injury. And so there have been injuries on the defensive line, but they still move guys away. And if you want to watch Kyle Williams play, you can read the article cover on the Buffalo Bills defensive line. And there's a lot of good stuff in there as far as that goes. But
thank you. I totally forgot he was hurt. Sorry about that. Yep, totally forgot.
Yeah, it's no problem. That's what I'm here for. But on the offensive side,
right.
The Bills have a lot of quick skill players. They have LeSean McCoy, Carlos Williams, Sammy Watkins. And which player of these three or which offensive player in general do you think is going to be the biggest problem for Houston heading into this game?
Well, they call him Ty God. Tyrod Taylor. he's a fun guy to watch. He really is, because he can throw the ball. He can run the ball. He's going to get hurt. I think he is probable for this game. I think was the last that I saw. He is a lot of fun to watch. And then you bring up LeSean McCoy. You got to wonder where this team would be if Joe Alonso was starting Carlos Williams every week at running back. That by itself would be probably a big enough upgrade for a win or two. LeSean McCoy has been solid, but he's no longer the old Slim Shady. So the Bills have some skill position talent. Sammy Watkins, Robert Woods isn't bad. I don't think any of these guys are really living up to it, including LeSean McCoy. So Tyrod Taylor, that's my guy.
Yeah, and he throws a really good deep ball too, and that's always fun to watch him, where he actually takes some shots on the sideline. I think the weird thing too is that whole trade for Alonzo from McCoy, where you're trading for a 28-year-old running back who had the worst season of his year the year before, who's coming off an injury, and then you're going to not only trade for him, but then also give him $10 million a year, whatever the figure is, just to get him to stay in Buffalo because he didn't want to go there really to begin with. And he still makes some moves and all that, but he's not worth $10 million a year. And really no running back is besides Adrian Peterson. But I thought that whole thing was silly. My thing is I'm going to go with Watkins. I mean, last week he was really, really good against the Chiefs in that game that they lost that they probably should have won. But, just like the route running in the hands from him, he's kind of like DeAndre Hopkins, but he has the speed. And I think his ceiling is higher than Hopkins is, but he doesn't have the refinement there just yet. And it's also kind of weird with him, where he's either really on or he's really off. And I saw some stat that he has either below 40 yards every game or above 130 yards every game. And so you don't know exactly what's going to happen every time he steps on the field. But I think Hopkins will probably be the biggest problem for Houston in this one. Not necessarily because of the matchup, but because of how good he can be.
Yeah, because he's a crazy athleticism kind of guy. I mean, he's a good comp for him. For Sammy Watkins, really is DeAndre Hopkins. They're very, very similar players with similar skill sets.
Yeah, and speaking of matchups, which one are you looking forward to watching on Sunday the most?
I got to be honest. The one I'm looking forward to, and you don't say this very often, is J.J. Watt versus Cordy Glenn. The Bills offensive line is very binary in a lot of ways. They're either really good or really bad. And Cordy Glenn has been having a good year. He's a fun guy to watch, as much as I hate to say it, because he's a total asshole. So is Richie Incognito. They're both good football players, know their technique, know their positioning well, use their hands well, et cetera. So if we line up Watt a lot against Cordy Glenn, which we're going to see to a certain extent, that's going to be a fun battle to watch. Is can Cordy Glenn, with the year he's having, the skill set he has, is he going to be able to match up well with Watt? I mean, the answer is no, duh, but it's still going to be a fun matchup.
Yeah, and last year Watt had the best game of his career against the Bills. He had zero sacks, but I think he had 12 quarterback hits, was held constantly, and he had that interception on E.J. Manuel that won that game. For me, though, it's going to be McKinney and Cushing against these guards, because the Bills love to pull, Incognito pulls all the time, the second level. And I'm excited to see not only how they take on these guards, but their ability to read the play, recognize, hit the hole before the guard can get there and slip underneath it and make a tackle in the backfield. And McKinney's been, you know, exceptional at reading and reacting against the ball carrier this year.
Yeah, he is the definition of a downhill thumper. He really is. You know, he's doing other things well, but man, that dude like gets down. I love McKinney. Love him.
And you know what? The best part about him is he's not Barrett Rood or Brady James or Justin Tuggle or Akeem Dent or Tim Dobbins or Jeff Tarpinian or Max Bulla or Mike Muhammad or any of the other just, you know, turds that have played the inside linebacker position since D'Amico Ryans has left.
Oh, my God. Well, you know, I don't want to really see him trying to cover Shane Vereen out in the at wide receiver either, though. So.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Well, do you have anything else you want to say about the Bills?
No, because I was segueing into the next segment, so I'm not going to do that. So let's segue.
All right. So we'll do our predictions now, and both of us are 6-6 this year. We both, you know, we picked the game right last week. We both picked the Texans would be the Saints, but we picked a much closer game than the kind of blowout it was, and. You know, we're 6-6, and again, we're playing for some obscure, I know, mystery gift at the end of the year. Whoever has the best record. And there's a tiebreaker. We'll either do point differential or go by the playoffs. But, BFD, who do you have in this one?
At the beginning of the year, I saw this as a much tougher game. What I did not expect from the Buffalo Bills was their defense to really just not be very good. And we've already beaten that horse about the head and shoulders a little bit. What I didn't expect was the Bills' offense to be that good. But, you know, they have great skill position players, but they're still not really a great offense. So I have to take the Texans on this one. I would not have said this at the beginning of the year. I did not think it true. I did not think it would be true. But the Bills' defense, man, just such a disappointment. I'm going to take the Texans 27-13.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to I kind of feel the exact same way. I think Houston's able to score 24 points again. And I think that Tyrod Taylor, you have a quarterback who's not really accurate at all, and the accuracy becomes a problem in the red zone. And with the way Houston's run defense has been playing, I think that the inability to score, you know, touchdowns in the red zone is going to hurt Buffalo by having to have Tyrod Taylor throw on third downs. And so I think Houston's going to win this one 24-17. And it could end up being, you know, 24-13, something like that as well. But I'm picking Houston, too.
Yeah, it's just this went from a matchup that I did not want, I was not excited about, to one that's like, wow, you know, all of a sudden this is a pretty good matchup for us. It you know, things happen during the season. I just did not see the Bills' defense turning into a train wreck under Rex Ryan.
Yeah, and I was worried about it when they made that hire because they're going to stick in 3-4. You know, it's a team that's built on the defensive line, kind of messed all that up. And I was really excited to watch this game because I had so much fun watching the, you know, Bills play last year and watching that defensive line. And that game last year was really a lot of fun. And they, you know, Rex Ryan go ahead and go ruin it as well as injuries.
Yeah, well, who cares? It's Rex Ryan. Fuck him.
Yeah. Yeah, well, do you have anything else at all?
There's one person I forgot to mention. It's going to be a fun guy to watch to keep your eyes on. And it is like kind of my same thing with Desmond Trufant for the Falcons. But Stephon Gilmore is a shitload of ton of fun to watch. He is just a very athletic quarterback. He's young. He's learning the league. He's learning how to play. He has the physicality physical attributes all over the place. He's got the quicks. He's a lot of fun to watch. So he's another guy. If you can't have Kyle Williams, you can have Stephon Gilmore.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad you brought that up because on the other side, they were starting Darby, who's a rookie, and Alex Smith threw like 150 yards of deep passes on him. And when Alex Smith is doing that to you, that's a big problem. So look out for whoever is Darby covering, and that could be a huge mismatch heading in this one as well that I forgot to mention.
Well, and Darby's had decent games this year, too. It's just, you know, Alex Smith really found something there.
Yeah. Well, I guess anyways, this week I should have two articles. One's going to be one on why the Houston Texans defense is good as I mentioned earlier. And I also wrote a guest post for this website called Inside the Pylon about Linval Joseph, who plays defensive tackle for the Minnesota Vikings. And we're talking about Kyle Williams, underrated defensive players. And Linval Joseph is just like my favorite hipster player this year. He's huge in the center of the field. He makes lots of tackles. He's a lot of fun to watch. And I think he's the most underrated defensive player in football. But check out for those this week. And also, if you want to learn more about the Bills, you can read that Buffalo Bills defensive line article I wrote last year. But anyways, thank you for listening tonight. Thanks for everyone who asked questions and those who listen live. If you're listening on iTunes, go ahead and rate and review us. If you're listening to us on your commute tomorrow morning, like J4K is, have a lot of fun. I hope we make your morning that much better. And if you like the show, tell all your friends like you did last Thanksgiving. Keep spreading the word. We'll be back next week at same time, Tuesday at 7 p.m. Central. I'm Matt Weston. Thank you for listening to Battle Red Radio. And thank you for being on with me again tonight, BFD.
Woo!